You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Monica Weiss. Monica, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, Brainerd. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about what you're doing now. What's happening in your studio, or what are you working on at the moment?
Well, actually, I had a whole conversation yesterday in my studio about the new project with Nina Alexander, who's a poet based in New York. And I've been working rather hard on a project which already began in October last year. And I was invited by a curator based in India, in Kolkata, to consider a new project in India, actually in New Delhi. And so that was, it became a little crazy because my studio looked like a crazy place for someone who is a complete ignorant about India, trying to take in the entire, history and culture of a country. But so I often start this way. So in my practice, especially recently or lately, I first get an invitation, and then either I go there or I research the place, and then I encounter something that somehow resonates or calls my attention. And from there, some kind of a project emerges. So with this case, over the last several months, until I actually went there in March, I got most interested in two sort of sites or events in New Delhi. One is the India Gate, which is kind of like this very large arch, and it's a memorial in the middle of New Delhi, which is part of Delhi. And then the other one is a very horrific gang rape in 2012 on a young woman that was done on a bus, on a moving bus that was moving through the city. And those two sort of like events or sites, her body and the body of the monument, kind of I started to obsess about them. And that's how this current project developed. And I've been also working on other things, alongside this one, but that was kind of taking big part of my energy, and it's still doing so.
So that's very interesting. And of course, I know that story about the bus that was horrific and, got international attention. And
yes.
Maybe this,
mm-hmm.
this is a good project to talk a little bit about, because we're talking about the body, her body, the history of India.
Yes.
And I know the project isn't developed yet, but how do you imagine that might appear final form?
It's actually developed quite developed by now, because I've decided to it's still developing, but I've decided to put it into two parts. Basically, the overall larger title is Two Laments. So one lament is somewhat going to be around the notion and the site of the India Gate, with all of its complicated history, post-colonial shadows and the architectural event of India Gate. That was something that was built by the British towards the end of First World War to celebrate and to commemorate Indian soldiers who died for the British Empire. So it's very complicated that way. But also around that gate, all the protests happening, against that particular rape and other protests as well. So since the colonial times, the monument has acquired additional properties. It's not just a colonial residue, but it is, of course, that kind of a rape of the whole city, because the New Delhi was built years after the city was almost erased or eradicated during the siege, the attack by the British in 1857, I believe. But my main focus right now is the other lament, the lament for the young woman, who sometimes is called in India Nirbhaya, which means in Hindu fearless. But it's a project which is not necessarily just about India or just about this particular case, because of course it usually is like that in my practice. I start with something quite specific, and then it becomes something more poetic or larger or more complicated. You know, it sort of acquires more layers. But basically what I think I am going to do, I have a part of it finished. There will be 19 short films, and 19 because Nirbhaya is also sometimes referred to as India's daughter. You know, she was 23 years old only when it happened. And there's this Polish poet, I don't know if you know, I actually am from Poland, 17th century, so a long time ago. And he wrote 19 epic lamentations or laments, you know, in form of poetry for his daughter when she died as a young girl. And in 17th century, in Europe in general, it was really unusual, if not the very first time, to write kind of heroic epic poetry for a little girl, you know, someone unfamous and not a man. So I thought 19 also was a number large enough to give it an epic proportion for this project. And I also felt that because of the, you know, when I was researching it last fall, I found some details which were so extreme that it sort of somehow set in motion all of this process in me as an artist. And one of the details was that one of the perpetrators during the court trial said that he saw a red ribbon coming out of the young woman's body as they were raping her on the bus. And so I somehow obsessed about it. So those two physical objects, her ribbon, or actually, you know, I investigated it further. It was her intestines. And the India Gate, those two things. One, an extreme atrocity, an extreme, you know, sort of grotesque nature of this particular act, the horror of it. And the other one, the sort of the elegance, of course, of the memorial. And somewhere there, you know, it's cooking. but there, I have four cantos finished out of 19. I went there per invitation of this very wonderful foundation called Sanskriti. Spent there 1 month in the spring, and I worked with volunteer women, and I filmed them, and I choreographed their movements and recorded their voices. And now I'm so sort of recomposing all of this material into the 19 cantos, and it's been an intense process. Cantos, as you know, canto of course means a song, but for me it's also basically a form kind of a short, like a short film, poetic film with image, projected image and sound.
Which is a type of lamentation almost as well, or not?
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yes, yes. Each of them is kind of a lamentation, just like that, you know, that 19 poems by Jan Kochanowski that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that's such incredible material to deal with. I mean, that's so horrific. And the idea of the, you know, the red ribbon being her intestines, I remember reading the details of that. It's just a crime almost beyond imagining. And I would imagine that the viewers of this and the audience, which is India, in some ways is implicated in what's happening, or no? Is it? I mean, how is it? How do you think it'll be viewed by the audience there?
Well, I think that it's not meant for just the audience there. You know, because it's not just about rape in India or India Gate in India as a kind of a heroic monument. Because I think it's about. The sort of the overcoming of the trauma or the horror, you know, and what do we do with a woman's body in the public space? What's going on with its status? They showed in the Sanskriti Museum, they showed the first canto, which was able to finish there. And they're all very gentle and poetic. You know, I feel like I'm operating in a very liminal zone, in a sense that I don't... In my work in general, I don't try to expose people's lives or destinies. I think I want rather for the time to stop and for us to have a chance to refocus and to maybe at least not to forget, you know, to start with, I did a project a couple of years ago on the former on the site of a former concentration camp, and of course, first when they invited me, I said no, actually. But then I went there. It's in Zielona Góra, the border of Germany, and it's so it's in Poland now, and it's a very small concentration camp that was forgotten completely, and it became a dump, sort of like like a ruin with lots of garbage and plants growing through it. And I went there, and that's when I decided that yes, I should say yes, because of this idea of forgetting, or the practice of forgetting that we are obviously engaged in, all of us. You know, it's impossible to remember and to give justice to everything that goes wrong. But then on the other hand, I often feel that those places or events are a necessity for some kind of a dialogue or a relationship with the site. Or if I wasn't invited to India, I probably wouldn't have spent so much emotional energy on this, but because I was, and then I went there, then it's sort of unavoidable. But I think that the reactions, you know, I had a screening in my studio a month ago of those first four cantos, and it was very intense reaction, actually, from various people who are Americans, you know, mostly, or I don't know, from Colombia or China, so not from India necessarily. But one of the films is in collaboration with Mina Alexander, the poet I mentioned, because she's from India, actually. And in last fall, I emailed her when I was invited, and I said, you know, this is what I've been looking at. What do you think? Do I have a right to immerse myself in something that is on its surface so far away, you know, from my life? But then we had a very long conversation, and actually I know Mina for many years. She wrote a poem about one of my performances about 10 years ago, and she said, absolutely, This is what we do as artists. It was very reassuring. But in one of those films, Cantos, her poem will appear, because it was very surprising to me when we talked to each other last fall. She was actually then writing a poem about this event, about the rape, and her poem was called Moksha. And so one of those 19 films will be with her words. And now she's older, but some time ago she was also 23 years old, and she would stand on the same bus stop, actually. For me to anchor one of those films with a woman whose life is directly intertwined with the site, somehow it helps me to anchor my project even more.
You know, the idea of not forgetting is very important, and can change things, can change the world. I mean, this is really, do you consider yourself a political artist? To me, it seems that that's what this is. This is something that can, you know, draw attention to situations and potentially politically change them. I mean, just as in recently here in America, in the United States, I mean, this isn't an art event,
yes.
But the Confederate flag after that killing, the idea that suddenly made, you know, all the game makers, the app stores, everyone everywhere is removing the sale. Amazon, Walmart, all these huge retailers in this country are removing the flag from being sold because it is a symbol of racism. It's kind of extraordinary, people's ability to remember and even change things. It is political, right? Am I pigeonholing you, or is that okay to say? You are a political artist.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm happy you're saying this, because I think, you know, the word political has such an amazing etymology, polis, you know, the common space, the space that we share, that we're supposed to negotiate and discuss and agree upon all the time, you know, every day in a sense, at least symbolically. And so in that sense of the larger public domain or space, absolutely. I think if there's any hesitation in my speech, that would be that I also often am considered to be poetic in my work, whatever that means. But so, you know, I mean, I really admire artists who are just simply directly following a certain documentary impulse, you know. So I don't work this way. So I work with things which call for my response, you know, make sort of me feel like I am needed. My attention as an artist is needed. But I also then make out of it something else, you know, this third place, I guess I would call it, this kind of a threshold or somewhere, you know, somewhere there, the place which is neither documentary nor only an imagination, but it's like in between, you know. And I think because documentary impulse, I think the way I understand it, it is something that it's a task that never ends. If you think about it, you know, we can document things all the time, and there's always next second, next minute, and there is this never ending. But with a work of art, something happens there that is of its own quality, you know, that also needs to have a meaning. Then reflects back on various events or on the imagination itself, etc. Not sure if I made it clear or
no, that is clear.
Even to myself.
No, that's clear. To me, the way I'm interpreting what you're saying is that there's also this, besides a documentary approach, there's another layer an artist adds. We could call it a poetic layer or interpretive layer or something else, but it adds overtones or undertones to something which maybe are difficult to articulate, but it's mm-hmm. part of the feeling or the message that the viewer receives. Does that
yes.
make sense? Is that,
yes, absolutely. I like that. It's a kind of the feeling because, you know, I had this interesting conversation some time ago with a lawyer, a woman who is actually a writer, writes about international law, and she writes about genocide, you know, she goes to Rwanda almost every year, things like that. And she somehow got to see my work and really loved it. And she said that her problem is that as a, you know, a person of a very high international standing, she still feels that it's artists who have a way of shortcuts, meaning that we have a chance to provide some sort of a fuel, or she called it a shortcut, you know, a faster way, you know, through the site of the work or the kind of the liminal space of the work of art to get there, where she thinks that most people don't have time to read her books with numbers and, you know, descriptions of victims and all of that. But maybe there is some of them who could arrive at the same place she wants them to be, somehow, you know, transformational place through the means of art or poetry, you know, something like that. It's an interesting conversation.
That's
shortcut.
That is interesting, right? Well, I don't know that it's a shortcut. I mean, yeah, there's always this dialogue between artists and writers. I remember, you know, it was such a strange phrase, but when I was younger, a teenager, a friend of mine whose father was a writer, and we kind of very eccentric family. And I remember being over there one day and, you know, I was an artist and I'm beginning to be one. And so were my friends. And he said, you know what the difference between a writer and an artist is? I mean, this is a little bit dark, but these are the kind of things he would say. And he said, an artist can always hang her painting, but a writer can only hang himself. And it's,
oh,
you know,
wow, that's,
you know,
quite...
It's disturbing, right? And as kids, we were
very.
Like, oh, my God, you know, mm-hmm. and then he leaves. You know, but this notion of artists do get to show their work and people see it with books,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But it's, I think that, I mean, I think that books and art making share a lot, at least, you know, because I work with time a lot, and it's always time. They're often time-based. Even when I delve into other media, they somehow have to do with time. So there is a requirement, in a sense, of spending time with my work, which is a little bit related to reading, you know, where you just kind of really need to spend time with the work. So I don't know that those two are so as divorced from each other. I think she meant more dry statistics, you know, and the kind of the science of it all. Because, you know, when you say writer, of course, one could think of a science writer or a poet, which is very different. Poet is much closer to what we do.
Right. I mean, I think that's what her father was thinking in that sense, mm-hmm. You know, the fiction writer. So, you know, it's wonderful that you're doing this work. It's also, as an artist, it's something that is most of this work not in the marketplace? Is it something that doesn't sell so much? Or how do you balance that with your other life, as I'm saying? Do you have to mm-hmm. teach and do other things? Or mm-hmm. are the commissions part of
mm-hmm.
how it
so,
works?
You know, I have a few very interesting collectors, mostly institutional, that I am very grateful that they are interested in my work. Like Ella Cisneros, you know, I don't know if you know about the Cisneros Foundation, Art Foundation, which is based in Miami. So they have a few of my installations, like Flagged on Milchenia, which is a kind of a large-scale project. And, you know, a few museums also have bought my works, especially after or because of the exhibitions, you know. So that has been really wonderful because I don't know that it provides me with a means of support necessarily, at least not yet, but in all of it, you know. But it does, you know, provide me with a hope that some of this work will survive me. And I am interested more in that than in the market itself for its own sake. But I, of course, I don't mind selling at all. But in addition to that, yes, I do teach. And I'm very grateful for teaching opportunity and also that, you know, it provides a certain zone of safety. And I also, I don't know, I grew up in a culture where teaching was something that artists are supposed to do, to give back, you know, that when you get older, you're supposed to somehow give a little bit to the younger generation of new rising artists. So it sort of works for me that way on a kind of a larger level.
I like that. That's how you were brought up, and we're talking about growing up in Poland. Was that the notion
yes.
of artists maturing in their careers is also about an essential component of that. You were brought up to believe is also teaching. That's what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So, like, you know, oftentimes in Warsaw or in other, you know, cities in where I am from Warsaw, you would, you know, if you were like a well-known pianist or if you developed, you know, a significant body of work in any discipline, it was very natural and sort of expected that you would teach and that you would be a professor. So, yeah.
It's very interesting. I really admire the work you do, and I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating for me, and I'm sure the viewers as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.